Now, many industries and sectors have, of course, been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, the university sector is perhaps one of the worst hit in many regards, with thousands and thousands of workers being dismissed, many contracts not being renewed, and many casual staff simply losing their jobs. To discuss some of these impacts and the ways in which the university management around the country, particularly here in WA, have handled the crisis, a little earlier today I had the opportunity to speak to Dr. Tor Kerr. Tor is the Vice President of the NTU branch at Curtin, and he is currently running for State Secretary of the National Tertiary Education Union. I started by asking Tor what the university's response to the COVID-19 pandemic has been, and how has it been managed by university management around the country?
Universities before the pandemic were highly reliant on overseas students, and they were all decreasingly reliant on government funding, or at least setting themselves up for a day when government funding would be diminished. So if you look around Australia, you'll see major capital works, construction works on all the campuses. Before the pandemic, there was already a kind of shift of funding and emphasis away from ongoing kind of teaching and research practices into a kind of a construction of a physical construction of a place where students would be more like consumers than learners. And then it was into this context that the pandemic arrived. So universities tended to be in the middle of major investments in capital works. And these investments were kind of, the risk around these investments was always going to be managed in terms of reduction in payroll and other, what they call operational efficiencies. So we were going into a high-risk situation in the university sector anyway, at least the people working in universities, where any downturn in revenue was going to result in job losses rather than a decline in maybe capital expenditure or a use of assets as a buffer during that period. So we saw at least 17,000 jobs lost last year. They're mostly full-time contract positions, and many more hours and jobs were lost for casual staff during that period. My experience of being on a university, on an academic board, and seeing some of the documentation around the way that universities has been managed was to make the realization that risk in the university, financial risk in the university sector, was being borne through payroll, through the most flexible part of the payroll. So it was really casual staff that bear the brunt of any budgetary shortfall in revenue, whether that's less students enrolling in a particular course, or perhaps students withdrawing from a course before the week four census date. It's really casual staff that bear the brunt. They'll either not have a contract, or they'll lose hours, lose marking hours, or perhaps their contract won't even arrive before that week four census date, and they may not even be doing the teaching that they expected to do. So that, for me, is one of the big problems in the university sector, that the people with the most power to make the decisions are not being really hurt through any of the risks taken around these decisions. The people who are being hurt by those decisions are people with the least power to make those decisions, which are really casual staff.
And you mentioned there that there have been thousands of job losses around the country. Unfortunately, last month's federal budget may indicate even further losses, given that the funding for universities was reduced by nearly 10% over the next 3 years. It really seems like there is a bit of an attack on the higher education sector coming from the federal government, or at least a lack of importance or significance being placed on it. Will this just, you know, further those job losses and those cuts to wages and conditions in the sector, this, you know, quite incredible cut of 10% of funding?
Yeah, it seems that the Howard government policies from 20, 30 years ago are really being introduced now through the university sector. We know the Liberal Party had an intention of cutting university funding by 20%. They went to an election with that clearly stated a few years ago. And this 10% reduction next year, plus some further reductions in the years thereafter, result in a real cut in university funding of around 20% over the next couple of years. So that policy of reducing funding is being implemented by the government, but it's also being implemented at a time where, as long as the pandemic continues, every year the revenue from overseas students is reducing in the university sector. And I think in the second half of this year is when universities will really feel the pinch of that lack of revenue from overseas students. So from what we've seen over the last year, the way that universities will deal with this is basically by not renewing contracts that have come up for expiry for teaching staff, but also administrative staff. They'll reduce the amount of work done and an hour's paid to casual staff. And they'll offer, well, last year they offered a big series of voluntary redundancies in many institutions, but they're now at the point where they're off. They'll be basically doing forced redundancies through the sector if they're not doing that already. And in Western Australia, we heard news in the last 2 weeks that there'll be forced redundancies over at University of Western Australia in the second half of this year. And I would expect that, unfortunately, other universities may follow.
Now, of course, this, as you're, the picture you're painting here has terrible impacts on teaching staff and on other staff at universities, but of course it also has an impact on the students of these universities. Can you explain to our listeners what some of these impacts may be in terms of the quality of teaching and also just the courses available? I believe that there have been significant cuts in particular to undergraduate courses.
I mean, the first casualty of the cuts in terms of opportunity to study for students has been the reduction in language programs across Australia. So when this latest round of funding reduction was introduced by the federal government, they did it in the name of increasing strategic areas of study such as languages. But by reducing the amount of government funding available to universities to teach those programs, or total funding for those programs, basically universities responded in their very neoliberal way that they act today by just cutting those courses. So, for instance, Indonesian programs have disappeared from across Australia, from around Australia, even though that's been a priority language for the government and was a reason for this cut. So In the last few days, I've heard from the Minister of Education, Alan Tudge, expressing his frustration that the universities are not doing things the way that they should, but they're very much doing them in a very predictable way, that when you cut funding for certain areas, those areas will disappear because we have such a neoliberal culture of university management these days. So that's one of the unfortunate things for students. So their choice in terms of where they can study certain courses is disappearing radically. The other problem we've had, and we've seen it over the last few months, is that students have had to really get out and campaign and fight to retain things such as face-to-face lectures on campus and face-to-face teaching on campus. And that's been a big struggle, particularly in Western Australia, where we haven't been so impacted by the pandemic, and yet university management has used this as an excuse perhaps to replay formal lectures to perhaps reduce the cost of hiring lecturers and things like that. But it's a real loss to students not to be able to come onto campus and attend lectures and things.
I imagine that also has a huge impact on the kind of student culture on campus. And I guess I just wanted to ask about that, because you mentioned earlier the Howard era neoliberal policies that have been implemented into universities around the country. But there was, at least in the early 2000s, there was somewhat of a fight back from both students and staff around issues such as compulsory HECS fees and so forth. There has been some activism, though, in response to the most recent attacks on the university sector, with students and staff taking action, including some, although limited, some strike action. Can you talk to some of the, I guess, the organising that's been going on, at least here in WA, and, you know, what has the NTU been doing in conjunction with student groups to resist these attacks on universities?
First, let me start by saying I think the student guilds, from what I've seen in Western Australia, at least on my own campus, have been outstanding in, in really protecting education, the quality of education for students. I'm the branch vice president at my campus, and I've been working quite closely over the last 2 years with guild leadership to coordinate campaigns to maintain quality in teaching and learning, and to maintain courses. And to maintain internal funding within the university to try and ensure that goes towards teaching and research and doesn't just disappear into capital works projects. One of the problems we've had, I guess, in the NTU or in dealing with this era is that we're at a stage where, or we've kind of entered in the culture where we came into the pandemic trying to work with the university management, say this is mid-2020, and there was a national program that was being organized to basically enable universities to cut some of their salary costs so long as they maintained staffing levels and opened their books, made their books transparent, opened them up to the union, so there'd be a collaborative effort to try and save money and get through the pandemic. The university management withdrew from that process, and I guess one of the opportunities that was lost to the union at that point was that the union had set out with goodwill to enter into this process of helping the universities to save money, but then was rejected. And I think what the union's mistake was, at that time they should have really became active and joined the guilds in becoming much more active on campus and running campaigns, in a refusal to do a lot of the overtime, free overtime that was done over the last year. But instead, the NTU's really persisted in trying to work with management and collaborate with management, despite management not opening its books, not responding to Freedom of Information requests, despite management laying off so many staff and so many members of the NTU. And I think the NTU's found it hard to turn that corner from being trying to collaborate with management to becoming a kind of activist, to get back into that antagonistic position where it really demands minimal standards, minimal protections from university, rather than enabling the process of decline in staff numbers and enabling the process of decline in university courses being offered. So just from being an NTU representative working with the Guild, I've sensed the Guild's frustration with the NTU for not going hard enough when the Guild really wants to go in, campaign hard and fast on an issue, and there's often a very narrow window of opportunity to do that. We've found that we couldn't we would go and make a request, say, to NTU at a state level, and we just couldn't get support for those campaigns and support for those actions. So we just found that NTU has been dragging its feet and really unwilling and unable to take management on, university management on key issues of protecting, which would protect their members.
I guess just finally then, Tor, the situation as you've described it is already quite dire for university staff and in some aspects university students as well. But it is certainly likely that it will get worse, not only as the impact of this 10% cut, budget cut, comes to pass, but also as inevitably we head into more of an economic recession. As you mentioned, WA has been quite lucky in many respects in regard to the pandemic. However, it very much still seems that a deepening of the recession is looming here in Australia in the next few years. This will obviously have huge impacts on workers in the sector. Do you foresee that that these challenges that you're discussing there in terms of perhaps the unwillingness of the union to become more active and more militant, do you foresee that they will be overcome and that there will be a bit of a resurgence of activism both within the union and the student body, and ensure that there is, at least a bit of a fight back against some of the things to come?
Sure. I think there has to be change in the union. We've got a very activist group of members in the casual staff who really have got the most to lose when these cutbacks go through, and they're also in the most precarious position. But they've also been the boldest and the keenest to take action and the people to step forward. What we've seen in the NTU is a kind of a division or a kind of schism break, you know, emerge between kind of the established way of doing things in the NTU leadership, which is the people kind of, if you like, composing that leadership are in a less precarious position than, say, the casual staff. But the leadership of the NTU is kind of dominated by that culture of kind of complacency, of petty privilege. And they've tended to see, from what I can tell at least, they've tended to see that that more active casual membership within its ranks as a threat rather than an opportunity to reinvigorate the union and take action on really obvious you know, kind of violations of worker rights. The thing is that casuals work on a one-hour contract. Often their contracts are not, you know, they may be starting work often without contracts at the university. We can see instances at our university where the work they do in marking, they may not be, you know, in some schools they may not be paid for that marking, to say, until maybe 8 or 10 weeks after they've actually done that work. So we know that the casual staff are taking personal loans just to kind of survive, and, you know, in that time period to wait for that pay to come in. So rather than really trying to protect and work the most vulnerable and work with the most vulnerable within its ranks, it's tending to ignore them or kind of see them as a threat rather than seeing the real threat as being really complacency in university management, you know, a kind of a neoliberal culture whereby NTU leadership and university management just works together in kind of managing the decline of universities, particularly state universities. And I think there's an opportunity to turn that around. And there's certainly enough energy to turn that around within the NTU membership and particularly within the casual ranks, because for people working as casuals, I mean, many of them have worked as casuals for years, but these are people who are often looking forward to some kind of university career or some kind of career path into the university sector. Currently, there are very few opportunities for them to move from being a casual worker into a ongoing position or even to have a career at the university. Those career positions just haven't been made available by university management. And I think there's a desperate need to change the way that things are being done. And that body of casual workers certainly has the interest to bring about a change. And I think they have the energy and they have also kind of a sense of outrage. You know, they've been abused for years and years and years and they want change. They believe in they believe in the purpose of a state university sector. And I think it's time to really listen and work with the casual group within the membership to change the way that universities operate.